Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
What compels some of us toward adventure? Why do some people seem to want to seek out danger, while others, like myself, would rather just hear about it? How could it be that of 7 experienced adventurers, only 1 survives? Welcome to Strange and Unexplained with me, Daisy Egan. I don't know how many times I gotta tell you not to go outside. It's dangerous out there. And the more extreme the climate, the more danger you may encounter as you venture further in, the less likely you are to see me. This week's story brings us to the base of one of Earth's oldest mountain ranges, nestled in a particularly wet and precipitous region of subarctic Russia. Pack your bags with only what you can carry on foot. And if you have space, some patience and understanding for my pronunciations to come. I'm not Russian, despite my impressive accent work on this very podcast. On we go. On August 10th, 1993, a group of kayakers were making their way down the Snezhnaya River along the foot of the Kamar-Daban Mountains in southern Siberia, when they spotted a girl on the bank frantically waving her arms to get attention. They made their way to the shore where one of the kayakers, Alexander Kovitnitsky, would later say the girl, quote, threw herself at one of our participants and cried on her chest for a long time. She was incoherently telling us that people had died and how scared she was, end quote. The girl was 17-year-old Valentina Valya Utachenko. The kayakers took Valya to a rescue station where, after being given some food, blankets, a half a mug of vodka, and some system regulation, she recounted the harrowing tale of how she came to be alone on the shore of the river that day. Valya had been part of a group of experienced hikers traversing the Retransliator summit, a 220-kilometer hike to a peak elevation of 2,371 meters. Relatively, that's about as high as a 718-story building. And now, my calves hurt. For those of us brought up on the metric system, that is almost 137 miles. I had to run those numbers a few times because when I tell you my jaw dropped at that number, 137 miles? That's a lot of miles, friends. What matters is that this particular hike was rated 4 out of 5 for difficulty, according to a Russian news source that covered this story. According to a piece on the Morbid Curiosity website, the group's leader, 41-year-old Ludmila Korovina, was a, quote, skilled survivalist and hiking instructor who was referred to as a master by her co-workers and pupils. She was renowned for treating her students harshly and frequently pushing them quite hard. But in the end, her students said she was a terrific teacher who instilled confidence in them and taught them essential hiking skills, end quote. She was tough but practical. She pushed her students but was never unsafe. She'd earned the title of Master of Sports, which is apparently a high honor in Russia. Along with Valya, the others in the hiking group were Alexander, or Sasha, Krasine, age 23, a student who'd met Ludmila and joined her hiking group as a regular when he was just 12, and whom Ludmila considered to be almost like a son. Victoria Vika Salasova, age 16, whose mother had to call and convince Ludmila that she would behave. Apparently, on a previous trip, Vika broke down from exhaustion, but also acted up. In what way, I don't know. Then there was 24-year-old Tatiana Filipenko, who'd been on hikes with Ludmila before, 19-year-old Dennis Schwatzkin, who joined at the last minute, when another hiker backed out, and 15-year-old Timur Baponov, who came from a family of sports enthusiasts and whose mother had complete faith in Ludmilla, having hiked with her herself in the past. All six hikers under Ludmilla's care were friends and had hiked with Ludmilla before. And while this was a notoriously difficult trek, as I said before, Ludmilla wouldn't have led them there if she didn't think they were capable. They spent 6 months preparing for this hike. Valya would later tell the Russian One TV channel in an interview discussing their training and experience, quote, "We had never had any life-threatening situations. Everything was thought out down to the smallest detail, from shoes to underwear," end quote. The group headed out on August 2nd. On the 4th, they reached the summit and began their descent while it was still light out. But even during the day, there was almost no visibility at this point because of the relentless rain and snow. Apparently, a Mongolian cyclone had come through. Listen, I'm no meteorologist or anything, but shouldn't they have had some kind of advance warning about this extreme weather? Do Mongolian cyclones, unlike other kinds of cyclones, come out of nowhere? And while everyone had complete faith in Ludmilla right out of the gate, I have to question her choice here. I don't know what a Mongolian cyclone is, but I'm pretty sure I wouldn't want to hike into one. According to Valya's written account of the incident, quoted in a piece on Komsomolska Pravda, or KP, a Russian news website that seems to be their version of a daily news type situation, in a 2018 article about the incident, the group pitched two tents in a clearing. By 6 a.m., some of the tent poles and stakes had been ripped apart and out of the ground by the wind. The group was freezing and wet by 10 a.m. when they packed up their gear and continued to head down the mountain. They didn't even make it a tenth of a mile before Alexander fell. A couple members of the group tried lifting him up, but he fell again. Nevertheless, Ludmilla told the group to keep going, but stopped them again almost immediately. The group covered themselves with a tarp in an effort to stay dry while they presumably waited for the cyclone to pass. Valya claims that Ludmilla felt Sasha's pulse and his heart had stopped beating. Ludmilla asked her to drag Vika down. I don't know why Vika needed dragging at this point, but here we are. Quote, "She asked me to drag Vika down. I went up to her and she bit me. I dragged her to the others. Tatiana started banging her head on the rocks. Dennis hid behind the rocks and crawled into his sleeping bag," end quote. The piece goes on to recount in third person, quote, "She crawled over to Korovina, but she wasn't breathing. She tried to lift Timur. When she realized no one was moving, she began to descend to the trees. She got dressed and laid down in her sleeping bag, covering herself with the tarp. In the morning, she climbed up and saw Tatiana on the rocks, Dennis, Timur, and Vika. Higher up, Sasha and Korovina. None of them ever rose again," end quote. But as time went on, Valya's story would shift. The search for answers as to what exactly happened would continue. And, like the hike, there'd be switchbacks. Strangers, Father's Day is coming. This year, instead of getting him a tie, give him the gift of memories with StoryWorth. Just last night, I was thinking about my dad's brother, who died when I was about 10 years old. I wish I knew more about my Uncle Phil and his partner Pat. With StoryWorth, my dad can take his time to thoughtfully share stories in a beautiful keepsake book that I can pass down to my kid. Each week, StoryWorth sends him a question about his life. He responds however he wants, writing back over email or web or voice recording, or, new this year, a guided phone call. No apps, logins, or tech hassle. StoryWorth meets him where he is so he can focus on the joy of remembering and reflecting. You can even help pick the questions. You can choose from pre-written questions, write your own, or let StoryWorth create personalized questions based on his life. You get each story as he tells it, and after a year, StoryWorth compiles everything, his words, his photos, his life, into a beautiful hardcover book. Families have used StoryWorth to create over a million books, and more than 500,000 five-star reviewers agree it will be a treasure your family will love. New this year is StoryWorth's unlimited plan. Buy it once and you can give StoryWorth memoirs to friends and family all year. Plus, it comes with all their newest features and multiple full-color book copies. This year, give Dad a gift that captures who he really is before the stories get harder to remember. Father's Day is Sunday, June 21st. Order right now and save up to $20 at StoryWorth.com/Daisy. Save up to $20 at StoryWorth.com/Daisy. StoryWorth.com/Daisy. In 2018, journalist Natalia Varskova wrote a piece for KP, the Russian news site, tracked Valya down and got a slightly different version of the story. Valya was extremely reluctant to talk and claimed she'd been made to sign an NDA after the event, though by whom she didn't say. She'd been so quiet about the incident, in fact, that her husband didn't know about it until he stumbled on a news piece about it a couple years before Varskova came knocking. After some persistence on Varsakova's part, Valya opened up and had this to say, quote, "It was freezing cold at the top. It was early morning. We were sleeping. Korovina woke us up, told us to pack our things and go down the gorge. She tried to save us. She just didn't have time. The wind was so strong that we were sliding down instead of walking. Suddenly, Sasha fell. He started foaming at the mouth. Korovina sat down next to him, hugged him, and that was it. She didn't get up again. And then all hell broke loose. And to this day, I don't understand how long it lasted. It was like a horror movie. Everyone was falling. Everyone was bleeding, foaming at the mouth. Blood was running from their noses." End quote. This was not the story she'd told in 1993. Did she leave things out back then? Had she blocked them out and then remembered them over time? Or was she making things up, either knowingly or not? But then, when Abin Tom Sebastian from the Morbid Curiosity blog tells the story in 2022, it goes like this. Quote, "After breakfast, they headed back down, and a little while later, from the back of the crowd, Sasha started to scream. They turned to look at him, and he was frothing at the mouth and bleeding from his eyes and ears, and then collapsed, shaking, and then motionless. Ludmilla told the rest of the group to keep going. She was desperate to get Sasha to wake up and was in a terrible state of distress. The remaining group had not traveled very far before hearing Ludmilla's cries. They noticed she was exhibiting Sasha's symptoms and rushed to help her. Tatiana was the first back and the next to pass out, clutching at her throat as if she were having trouble breathing. She was able to make it to a nearby rock, where she bashed her head against it until she became limp. Dennis crouched behind the rock as Timur and Victoria fled. After seeing three of her closest friends seemingly pass away in a matter of minutes, Valya was left immobile. Victoria and Timur both passed out while running and died similarly, ripping their clothes off, spitting up blood, and tearing at their throats. Valya and Dennis sprinted away from the scene of their friend's death after realizing they were the only survivors. However, Dennis didn't take long to collapse violently. In a panic, Valentina fled, leaving her friends behind. The only things she had were a tent and the clothing on her back. Once she got far enough away, she set up the tent under some trees and slept. When she woke up, she knew she would need supplies and so had to go back up to where everything had happened. When she got back, none of the bodies had moved, so she grabbed what she needed, made sure they were all dead, and headed back down following power lines for 4 days, hoping she would be found." End quote. It's worth noting that another website, the Hawthorne Files, has a very similar version of this story. However, neither website cites their sources, and this may just be one of those blog loops where they all just quote each other for eternity. Like a blog circle jerk. There is a frustrating lack of contemporary news coverage about this case, unless it's lurking on Russian newspaper archive sites that I don't know how to access. Interestingly, even journalist Natalia Varskova couldn't find the contemporary coverage from KP, the news outlet she was working for, even though she said she knew they'd covered the story in 93. Just as there are varying versions of the event itself, there are also varying versions about the rescue. Weather prevented the search and rescue from starting until August 24th, although at this point, it would have just been a search and recovery as there was no one left alive to rescue. It took 2 days for the team to find the bodies. According to Varsakova, the search and rescue team wasn't even looking for Ludmila and the five other hikers from Valya's group. Varsakova's piece reports, quote, while rescuing other lost tourists from Omsk, searchers accidentally stumbled upon a campsite containing six mutilated corpses. By then, the hikers' bodies had become severely deformed and had become food for rats and birds, end quote. Alexei Levinsky, who was part of the search, said, quote, there were also 200 to 300 meters left to the edge of the forest. I don't remember birds singing or flying there, not even crows, at the place of death. It was well ventilated, the bodies were partially mummified, and there wasn't even a putrid smell, end quote. Lead searcher Yuri Golias would recall, quote, it was a terrible picture. The guys were lying on a small ledge, some pressed close to each other, some a little further away. No eyes. Worms were crawling in the empty eye sockets and slightly open mouths, end quote. According to a website dedicated to the Dyatlov Pass incident, which I covered in season one and will rerun on June 8th, all six people were found wearing thin leotards and three of them were barefoot. Even stranger than that, though, the website shows a picture of a radio or lookout tower less than a mile and a half from where the bodies were found that could have been used to shield them from the weather. Ludmila would have known the shelter was there, so why she didn't seek it out when the weather became untenable, no one will ever know. Autopsies apparently showed signs of starvation, which makes no sense considering the hikers had food and were hardly on the trip long enough to be starving. On the other hand, I suppose if they didn't have enough food for such a long trek, they could have starved. The official autopsy report states that all the victims died of hypothermia, except Ludmila, who died from a heart attack. Investigators said the six died from the freezing temperatures, being starved of oxygen at such a high altitude. They had next to no nutrients in their body, including glycogen, the body's fuel. A piece on Gazeta.ru from 2022 reported, quote, experts also identified degenerative changes characteristic of protein dystrophy in the internal organs of the deceased, the heart, liver, and kidneys. Additional histochemical studies of the liver and heart tissues of the deceased revealed a complete loss of glycogen, which is typical of general hypothermia. Indirect disturbances in protein metabolism suggest that they suffered from protein dystrophy, possibly due to starvation, end quote. So either the starvation contributed to the hypothermia, or the hypothermia contributed to the starvation? Hypothermia would explain why they were so underdressed. Paradoxically, the colder someone gets, the hotter they can feel, which is why about a quarter of people who are freezing to death strip themselves of their clothing. Either way, Valya claimed the group had eaten well during the trip, though the manner in which she said the group cooked their food changed from her initial recounting in 93, in which she said they used camping stoves, to her recounting in 2018, in which she said, quote, we lit a fire and cooked. We had cereal, powdered milk, crackers, stewed meat, carrots, beets, onions, candy, and chocolate bars. We'd go down into the forest and light fires, end quote. Lead searcher Yuri Golias, however, claimed that when they got to the site of the hiker's last meal, they only found one empty can of stew. More on this and Golias' opinion later. Natalia Varsakova asked Valya why she thinks she survived when the rest of the group didn't. She said it was probably because she'd grown up on a farm and was strong and sturdy. But Ludmila was an extremely experienced and well-trained hiker, so I don't know that this answer is sufficient. To this day, no one knows what happened on the mountain that morning. But of course, theories abound. Strangers, this episode of Strange and Unexplained is brought to you by Alloy Health. Let's be honest, aging can come with some unwelcome changes. Sleep disruptions, hot flashes, brain fog, weight gain, and decreased libido can hit us hard. Menopause is inevitable, but it's also treatable. Almost half of people experiencing menopause go 3 or more years before seeking relief from menopausal or perimenopausal symptoms. Most don't know where to go for a solution, and for a lot of us, our general PC never even suggests hormone replacement therapy. But that's where Alloy comes in. Alloy is a digital health platform that connects you with a menopause specialized doctor to help you feel and look your best in midlife. Your doctor will help you find the best, safe, science-backed treatments for your symptoms, skin, hair, weight, and sexual wellness delivered right to your door. Everything is done online from the comfort of your home. Alloy is fast, accessible, and their treatments actually work. You just complete your intake form and you'll receive a treatment plan from your doctor. You'll be matched with a menopause specialized physician who will create a personalized treatment plan tailored to your specific needs. Get your 3-month supply. Once approved, Alloy ships your prescriptions directly to your door with automatic refills. Alloy's prices are reasonable. Honestly, I think I'll be switching all my HRT prescriptions over to Alloy. Plus, they have everything from oral hormones to skincare to help treat menopause symptoms. Join the 95% of women who tried Alloy and saw relief in the first 2 weeks. Head to myalloy.com and use the code STRANGE and tell them all about your symptoms, and you'll get a fully customized treatment plan and unlimited messaging with your doctor. Plus, you'll get $20 off your first order today. Head to myalloy.com and use code STRANGE to get $20 off your first order. So what did happen to those 6 people on that mountainside? One reason starvation seems unlikely in this case is that Ludmilla knew how to forage, as would, I suppose, anyone in her group who were experienced hikers. There should have been plenty of food to forage. According to Vladimir Zinov, one of the rescuers, quote, "It's August. There are mushrooms, berries, and wild garlic in abundance. That's what they were counting on. If it weren't for that damn Mongolian cyclone, they would have made it through," end quote. So perhaps the weather made foraging impossible. But some think that perhaps the group did forage for mushrooms and ended up eating the wrong kind. And by some people, I mean the guy over at Morbid Curiosity, who hypothesized that perhaps one of the hikers picked the wrong kind of mushroom for breakfast, and their resulting altered state would have made for poor decision-making and forgetting their survival training. He also explains that weeping blood is a common hallucination on mushrooms. I, myself, have never hallucinated anyone weeping blood. I don't know how I would have reacted to that. I also couldn't find any science-backed report that seeing people cry blood is, quote, common on mushrooms. Hallucinations are highly personalized experiences. It's not like one kind of psychedelic produces a specific kind of hallucination. What you see on an hallucinogen has to do with your own psyche. At any rate, not only were mushrooms not found in the hikers' stomachs at autopsy, Valya would have had to have ingested a lot of mushrooms to have tripped that bad, and it's hard to imagine she would have had the wherewithal to survive. Also, she never mentioned eating mushrooms in her recounting of the incident. Some have said that it might have been toxic water from Lake Baikal, which I also covered in Season 1 and will replay on June 11th. Apparently, the lake was a common dumping site for toxins, which might explain the monster that lives in it. I guess those little potable water tablets don't work on toxins. But again, no toxins showed up in the autopsies. Also, there were plenty of other hiking groups who would have been drinking the same water. As for toxins, apparently mountains in that area were/are popular testing sites for weaponized toxins. If the hikers had been exposed to nerve agents, it could explain the bruised lungs found in the autopsies. According to this theory, the nerve agent knocked them out, so the hypothermia was able to set in while they were unconscious or in a coma and exposed to the elements for an extended period of time. According to a piece about the incident on metro.co.uk, quote, "The deadly nerve agent Novichok was tested near Khmer Daban. As the gas lurked through the woods and the rivers, it can take months to dissipate, leading to the hikers' instant deaths or eventual passing as they were paralyzed and exposed to the frigid elements. Some locals claimed that bears in the summer of 1993 had been throwing themselves in front of trains, which may have been caused by the gas," end quote. Bears throwing themselves in front of trains. A piece on Medium explains the hypothetical science behind the scenario. The nerve agent would have had to have been tested within 4 to 5 months of the hiker's trip, at a higher, more discreet part of the mountain, and the rainstorm washed it downstream. The sun would have evaporated the water, and the agent remains behind near the ground or is dispersed in the air during evaporation. Sasha would have then had to walk through a highly contaminated area, causing near-instant symptoms. Then, when Ludmilla rushed to his aid, she got exposed. Then Tatiana was next to be exposed when she rushed to help Ludmilla, then Vika, then Timur. Because Vika and Timur ran, they had lower exposure and delayed responses. Valya only got near Vika and so didn't get a high enough dose, and maybe Vika biting her helped to save her because it stopped her from bending lower to the ground. Dennis, crouching and hiding, gave him his lethal dose. But perhaps the inciting incident that led to the group's demise wasn't about stumbling into toxins, but stumbling upon government secrets. Or maybe stumbling across suspicious sound waves. After the break, more theories. Another theory is that the group stumbled upon something top secret and were killed by the Russian government and/or military. But this was a popular area, so why it would be chosen for some kind of top secret operation doesn't make sense. Also, if you think they just let Valya live, you don't understand extrajudicial civilian murders by official groups. If somehow she managed to escape, she wouldn't have been able to stay escaped for long. They would have gotten to her. A piece on explorersweb.com posits that it might have been some kind of infrared sound. Infrared sounds are naturally occurring waves that are undetectable to human ears and can be caused by a lot of things, including earthquakes, volcanoes, and high winds. They, quote, can do a lot of physiological damage, leading to disorientation, panic, hysteria, hallucinations, cardiac arrest, organ rupture, and even death, end quote. According to a scientific paper about infrared sound waves presented at the International Scientific and Practical Conference in 2023, infrared sound has been known to cause psychological disorders, headaches, fatigue, sleep disturbances, and decreased concentration. It, quote, can cause unbearable sensations, dizziness, imbalance, etc., resonances in internal organs, for example, the heart, with consequences up to death. It can cause loss of working capacity, disorientation, nausea, vomiting, intestinal spasms, resonances in body cavities that cause organ dysfunction, blurred vision, temporary discomfort until death. At extreme levels, physical damage to the ear can occur with even brief exposure. At even higher levels, which occur practically only in pulses of excess pressure from explosions, other organs are damaged and the lungs are the most sensitive. End quote. But again, why Valya would have escaped this fate while her peers succumbed to it is unclear. And why hundreds of other hikers in this area have not met the same fate isn't explained. That, in my opinion, is the problem with any environmental theory. Even the fact that the group encountered a Mongolian cyclone that apparently brought blizzard conditions. It can't be that rare that other groups had not encountered similar conditions in the past. Also, did they not see the weather coming in the days ahead? At any rate, why others would have survived these kinds of conditions, including Valya, but these six experienced hikers didn't? Why? Well, there's one person who thinks he knows exactly why. Yuri Golias, the head of the rescue team that found the group, is of the opinion that Ludmilla is solely to blame for her own gruesome death and the gruesome deaths of the five others in her charge. Golias told Natalia Varsagova that he knew Ludmilla, quote, long before this incident. She was a very beautiful, strong-willed, athletic woman. We once crossed paths with her in Kakusi, north of Lake Baikal. Ludmilla and two boys, about 16 or 17 years old, came down from the mountains to our camp. The boys looked extremely exhausted. One of them couldn't even lift an axe to chop firewood. We offered them tea and bread. They attacked us as if they had never eaten anything. I asked what was wrong with them. Korovina replied that she was practicing some kind of survival training. When a group goes on a hike with minimal food and clothing, This is supposedly how she was training them to be prepared for various unforeseen situations. I was outraged. These are teenagers. They need to eat well, especially with such stress. End quote. Not entirely sure what her being beautiful had to do with anything. Also, it doesn't seem like he ever launched any kind of official complaint against Lyudmila, so perhaps he wasn't that outraged? As for how much food the hikers had, as I mentioned earlier, while Valya insisted they had plenty, Golias had this to say, quote, "We found one empty can of stew at this spot. It was cold, raining, and snowing, and Korovina, it seems, ordered one can of stew to be divided among seven people. I thought maybe I'll find some candy or chocolate wrappers. Nothing. That's how they ate, little by little. It's no wonder they all died at once. Their bodies were exhausted." End quote. But again, this doesn't explain how Valya not only survived the cyclone, but then survived for another 4 days before being rescued. And it's not like she spent those days conserving her energy. She was actively hiking out of the mountain. If the whole group had been starving when they died, surely Valya wouldn't have made it all that way. And despite the source I read that rated the hike a 4 out of 5 for difficulty, the former head of the Russian Rescue Training Center and a mountaineer and honored rescue officer of the Russian Federation told the Gazeta, quote, "There are numerous contradictions based on the testimony of the surviving girl. Blood was coming from her ears, foam was coming from her mouth, she was crawling down the slope, she was pushed. She said somewhere that everyone's eyes were wide open, then on the contrary, she closed everyone's eyes. Furthermore, the story that has survived to this day is full of lies. The following is glaring. The incompetent organization of the expedition from the very beginning. It was written that they prepared for 6 months. But such preparations were unnecessary for the Kamar Daban. It's only a third level difficulty. With such preparations, one could have climbed Everest. In short, there's no logic in the behavior of the guys and their leader." End quote. Ludmila's choice of resting spot would have been considered a rookie mistake. There were woods nearby in which they could have sought shelter from the storm, not to mention the radio or watchtower Ludmila certainly would have known about less than 2 miles away. Vladimir Zinov, one of the members of the search team, told Russian news outlet KP, quote, "They say Korovina was an extreme sportswoman. She led the guys with minimal food and clothing. She probably wanted to get through this difficult route lightly. Although any tourist who's been to the Kamar Daban knows that in the summer you need to pack warm clothes. The weather is unpredictable, and they didn't even have jackets." End quote. In her defense, though, the mean daily high for the Kamar Daban Mountains is 60.6 Fahrenheit, with a mean daily low of 44.2 Fahrenheit, and a mean daily average temperature of about 52.3 Fahrenheit. So perhaps a lack of jackets isn't a huge deal. They likely had other layers to compensate. Some have accused Valya of lying to account for the discrepancies in the two versions she told. I think it's more likely her memory is compromised because of the extreme trauma of the event and the time in between interviews. It could also be a form of survivor's guilt. Perhaps her brain made up the details of her compatriots foaming at the mouth and bleeding from their eyes in order to make her feel okay about having run away from the scene. Either way, I think it's pretty tacky to accuse a survivor of lying. According to the article in KP, when she was found on the riverbank, Valya had a severe cold, a fever, and a hacking cough. She said that she had begun to prepare for death. Quote, "She didn't want to die dirty and unattractive. She stripped off her clothes, waded into the icy water, and washed herself thoroughly from head to toe. She took clean clothes from her backpack and dressed. She washed everything else, even her sleeping bag, and hung it on the branches to dry. And suddenly, from around the bend of the river, bright catamarans appeared." End quote. But in 2018, when asked if she'd washed herself before her rescue, she said, quote, "I don't know. Maybe I really did act that weird there, but I remember washing myself much later when we were rafting down the river together." End quote. It will likely forever remain a mystery what happened to Ludmila and her group that morning in 1993 in the mountains of Siberia. But for me, the biggest mystery is how Valya survived when the rest of them did not. Whatever fate befell the rest of the group, How did she alone escape to that riverbank and survive? Trauma will do confusing things to the mind and its memory. It's not the responsibility of those who experience it to recount everything for the rest of our consumption. I'm sure the pressure that came with being the lone survivor of a famed hiker's mystery, such as this one, wasn't exactly a welcome stress in the wake of watching her comrades succumb to poisoned mushrooms, or infrared sound, or hypothermia, or starvation, or expungement from the Russian government, or whatever else could have catalyzed their death. Valya was only 17, after all. The story of the Kamar Daban incident lives on as a cautionary tale to all adventurers curious to venture into the unpredictable region. Stay inside, stranger. Don't say I didn't warn you. And that's a wrap on season 5. I'll be back in July with all new episodes. For June, please enjoy 2 episodes a week from our Greatest Hits Vault. Strange and Unexplained is a production of Three Goose Entertainment and Grab Bag Collab. This episode was researched by Keely Hise and written by me, with editorial help and sound mixing and engineering by Becca DiGregorio. If you have an idea for an episode or want to submit a question for an Ask Me Anything episode, head to strangeandunexplainedpod.com and fill out the contact form. I will write back. Eventually, I need an assistant. You can follow me on social media at Daisy Egan or follow the show at SNU Pod and Grab Bag Collab. Stay strange.